Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, I always think life's a whole lot better when you have good food. And we're going to be talking a little bit about food today with our guest, Peter Kwong, and his new book. It's called Wok and Roll. And it's a collection of recipes, some great philosophy, some funny stories, a lot of laughter, and I really am enjoying reading it. He teaches Chinese, Italian, and Mexican cooking, writes a weekly column for his local paper, and I tell you what, if I lived in that neighborhood, I would have that paper just to read his column. He's worked as a restaurant consultant in a number of cities around the U.S., recently moved to northern Wisconsin, I think probably 2 or 3 years ago now. And we'll talk with him about cooking and what it was like to experience the maybe a culture change from moving to the north part of Wisconsin. So it's all going to be a lot of fun. And you'll have a chance to talk with him. Maybe you're interested in learning about ethnic cooking. What would you like to know about successful restaurants, perhaps? You can join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Peter Kwong, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
No, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. So my wife is your fan, and then she's ecstatic to finally see you in person. So thank you very much. Really honored to be here.
Well, you were, Peter, born in Hong Kong. What brought you to the U.S.?
A college education.
Yeah.
Because in Hong Kong, after you graduate from high school, the opportunity to move on to university is almost like slim. And yeah. I wasn't a very good student. So I said, I have to go someplace. And at that time, America seems like the right thing to do.
Well, you obviously got here, got some additional education. You got started in the food business. How'd you get started in food?
I think the good Lord was punishing me because in Hong Kong, I never go to the kitchen and dinner's ready. You sit down, eat, and afterwards, someone will clean up the dishes. So my first job here to supplement my tuition was a dishwasher in a Chinese restaurant. That's how I started my cooking career.
And you went from there?
Yeah. And I worked my way up through restaurants as a prep cook, as a line cook, and as a busboy, as a waiter, bartender, finally end up to be manager. So just kind of move up the rank. So in a sense, now being a restaurant consultant, if you go to tell people what to do and you don't know anything about it, you know, it doesn't work. So now when I say something, this is how the dishwasher temperature should be in. They go, because I've done it before.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. What do you like about cooking?
Oh, gosh. Cooking can be really painful, so to speak, because you got to plan the menu, you got to buy the food, you got to prep the food, you got to cook it. In other words, you got to clean it up. But one thing that just really touched me is when everybody's done, they have a smile on their face.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I look around, there are no empty plates. To me, it's like, yes, I have touched somebody's heart. That's a fun part.
Well, you spent many years as a restaurant consultant. How did that progression happen, and what did you do as a consultant?
Well, as a consultant, you help people kind of, well, make money. Mm-hmm. A lot of restaurants opened up a restaurant, and they found out that, oh, my gosh, I call it the six P's. You know, where are you going to put it? Where's the place? People, who are your clients? Okay, so if you serve pork in a Muslim area, you're dead. and then the price, you charge too much, no one comes. You don't charge enough, you're working for free. And then promotion. How are you going to promote your business? How do you let people know about your business? A lot of places, they don't have a big budget like McDonald's. So when you go, oh my gosh, you know, they're like 4 to 7% of the sales goes to promoting. The billboards everywhere. But as a mom and pop, you can't afford it. So how do you promote your restaurant without spending a lot of money? And least but not least, profits.
Yeah,
are
profit.
You making money? Okay, a lot of restaurants, they folded. 95% of the restaurants in Wisconsin folded the first year, according to the Small Business Administration. So if you don't know how to run a business, even though you have great food, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Okay. You tell a kind of a, you have so many funny stories and fun experiences, but you do tell of one of the chapters in your book of a couple that retired and they were going to start a restaurant and they
yes,
had savings
yes.
and didn't last very long.
That was a sad story. I actually got a call from this elderly couple, and they actually have the restaurant opened. And I said, why you want to open a restaurant? They said, well, we got a nice pension. We got a nice retirement fund. We just start opening a restaurant. We'll be set for the rest of our lives. Little did they know that to run a restaurant, you really got to be hands-on, know everything about the restaurant. That was a sad story. They end up, I said, I'm sorry, you're so far down, I cannot help you. They owe money to everybody, especially to IRS.
Oh.
That's a deadly sin. You owe money to IRS.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then after building the business all these years, you just have some you can help and some you can't.
Yeah.
And that's the rewarding part. I just want to use those knowledge now to help people. I say, don't do this. I've seen this, you know, it didn't work. So
there you go. So here you were, you came from Hong Kong, get an education. You started as a dishwasher. You worked your way all the way up to a manager position. Then you got into being a restaurant consultant. You met Colleen somewhere along the line.
Yes. Thank God she saved my saved my life.
Well, and you were eventually living in Milwaukee, and then you decided to move to northern Wisconsin.
Yes, that was a bold move, and it kind of explained in my first foreword on my book, all because of our little granddaughter. Her full name is Elise Deborah Kwong Wing Yi. Kwong Wing Yi, that's her Chinese name. It was 3 years ago, I believe. The family, they live in the cities. Now I find out that the city is St. Paul's, Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And they came down for Easter. So after Easter brunch, after spending like 3-4 hours, they left. And it was then I looked at my wife and I said, honey, I don't want to live like this. And she looked at me and she said, like, question in her eyes, what do you mean? I said, we have to move closer to her. And closer to her, which means from moving from Milwaukee all the way to St. Paul's, Minneapolis area, which is a 5 hours drive. And bless her, I still owe her to this date. She didn't question me. She didn't say why. No. All she said was, okay. That was it. Okay. And everything happened, you know, after that point. We sold the house. We bought the house. We moved all within 30 days. All because she said, okay.
And you didn't, I think your son said, well, I'd love to have you close, but not too close. You wound up, I think you're right about that. You're caught one of your columns.
Oh, that is so.
So you wind up in Wisconsin.
Well,
staying in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, what we did was, after that statement, they said, well, what is too close and not too close? And it was about an hour radius. So we kind of used to drew a circle. And within this 1 hour, where can we live? And my wife, Colleen, asked me, I said, well, where do you want to live? And this is it. We're not going to move again. And I said, I love open air. I love nature. I love water. So if we can live by a lake or by a river, that'll be wonderful. And my gosh, she looked at the computer. She's very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she found a bunch of homes. And so actually spent 1 day driving around looking for all these new homes. And in Milwaukee, driving 15, 20 minutes was a long haul. Mm-hmm. And up here, hour and a half is nothing. I'm learning. I've been a city boy all my life. So now I learned how to live a country life. So we spent all day driving, you know, different cities. Just nothing hit. It was the last house of the day. I was ready to say, let's forget it. Let's just stay where we are. We're not going to move. And we drove to a home. My gosh, it was a nice driveway. And the right left side was a two-door garage. And it's a log cabin. And I didn't pay attention to anything. Just walked to the back of the log cabin. That was a big, not too big, but a nice lick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I go, wow, trees, the wind's blowing, the birds chirping, the squirrels go, kick, 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 kick. And I was there. That was it. I didn't even look inside. I said, this is it. So anyway, that was a bold move, yeah.
Peter Kwong, our guest today, he is the author of Walk and Roll. It's a collection of recipes, philosophy, and laughter. That's the subtitle, and based really on the columns that he began writing for the local newspaper up there. You found, by the way, that people were really friendly and welcoming. You made a lot of friends in a hurry.
It is totally amazing. We live in Milwaukee for the longest time, and then we kind of waved to the neighbors and said hello. That was it. But nobody really wants to know you.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of like a shield that, you know, they don't want to know you. They don't want you to know them. But up in the Northwoods, it's totally amazing. People just like, wow, welcome. And I teach a lot of cooking classes, make a lot of good friends. Kind of funny because everybody was waving at me, hi, Peter. And I'll go, excuse me, but who are you?
And where do you live right now? But where's the nearest town from where you live now?
We live in St. Croix Falls.
Yeah.
We couldn't even find it on the map. So when we were looking around, we go, St. Croix Falls, where is that? It's a little tiny town, about 2,000 people. But we're self-sufficient. We live in a log house. And I'm learning about septic tank, learning about all this propane gas tank outside. I go, what is that? They go, they were
that's
just laughing.
That's what eats your house.
Yeah.
Cooks your dinners.
Yep. So.
Oh, man. Well, let's give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or comment, and we're going to get to the food part of this here in just a second, because in his columns and in his book, you'll find many, many wonderful stories, but also a lot of great recipes to go along with the stories that Peter tells. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Talking today with author Peter House Kwong, who is a food consultant. He teaches cooking classes. He is really become an expert chef in Chinese, Mexican, and what's the third one? I forgot.
Italian.
Italian.
Why now I do Thai and Caribbean. I just kind of extend my expertise, so to speak.
Well, you can join in with your own questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we do have a question for Bruce and Phillips. He called to ask if you have a recommendation for a wok that would work well on a glass top stove.
Okay, the question is glass top stove, I would assume this electric.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, ideally, to use a gas stove is the best. Mm-hmm. But without it, it's fine. I teach cooking classes in high schools with just regular whatever equipment they have. So, glass top stove, the myth is you need a wok, you need all these fancy gadgets, but you don't really. If you have a non-stick, how'd you call it, what, Teflon pan, that will work just as well. Okay? And then if you really insist on a wok, which that will work better because you can wok and roll, stir fry, you can go to, Amazon. Okay, and look under. I just bought one. It's made in Korea. It's like only $40-some, but it works wonderful. It's a different material. It's not the regular cast iron or regular stainless steel. To answer the question, you don't really need a wok per se. If you have a nice nonstick pan, because it doesn't, all the sauces won't stick into the food, that will work just as well.
But if you want a wok, pretty much a nonstick wok. Do they have nonstick woks?
Yeah, most of the material these days are nonstick.
Yeah.
Okay, but if not, a regular, most of the Chinese restaurants, they have a cast iron wok. Okay, which is
tough on a glass top oven, a stove.
Yeah, because it's round bottom. So on that note, yes, it has to be a flat bottom. Otherwise, we'd be rocking and rolling. Yeah. That won't work. Yeah. So as a flat bottom stainless steel pan works just as well. Try that.
All right. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. What were some of the, and you talk about these adjustments and all the different things that have happened to you in your newspaper articles. How did you happen to get going on a newspaper article?
Oh, gosh. Everything happened in so many nice, heartwarming way. My intention after retiring, moving up to the Northwoods, was to write a memoir cookbook. It's called Have You Eaten? Have You Eaten is a term that we use in the Orient because when I was growing up, food was very scarce. Okay, there was no food around. So instead of greeting people with, hey, how are you doing today? They greet each other with, have you eaten? Have you eaten yet? And if you say, oh, yeah, I just have lunch, bless you. You have food in your stomach. Okay? And then the title of my new book was Have You Eaten? I tried to put them together and have some friends read it. When they read it, they go, yeah, you have a lot of good stories, but you're not really connecting them together. They're here, there, and everywhere. So I said, my wife was telling me that why don't you take a cooking class and improve your writing skills? And so I thought, yeah, good idea. So I joined a writing class called Write Right Now by Carolyn Weedin. She's our instructor. And so I've met a lot of great writers. They're just wonderful. Met a lot of new friends. And it just happened one Thanksgiving, the new local newspaper in the county leader was looking for a filler for the column. They said, anybody have anything to write? We'll print it. And everybody was busy because it was Thanksgiving. And we didn't know anybody. We weren't doing anything. So I said, I'll write something. So I wrote a column, how to make pot stickers, like dumplings.
Yeah.
But instead of regular with pork or shrimp, I said, with turkey, because it's Thanksgiving. And with my wacky sense of humor, making dumplings with turkey, unheard of. Everybody liked to read it. And the editor, Gary King, called me 3-4 days later and said, hi, Peter, this is Gary King. I go, who? But I'm the editor, and I like your column. I like what you read. Would you be interested in keep writing for us? I go, me? Writing a weekly column, impossible. I said, well, give it a try because it's fun. And I talked to my wife, and she said, yes, you need to improve your writing skill. And the best way to do it is just keep writing. So I said, why not? And and then we said, well, you need a name for your column. I said, oh, my gosh. And this came to mind because I like to play rock and roll with my guitar and piano, and I like to cook. So I said, why not walk and row? And that's how the book came along.
That's how it all got started.
Yeah, and it's been 2 years now, more than 2 years.
And so that, you got maybe 100 columns under your belt.
More than that, yeah. And it was his idea to put this book together because he got a lot of calls from readers. They told him that they love reading my column. Now, he never told me that. I think he afraid that I'll ask him for a raise. But he finally convinced me. He said, Peter, you have a lot of fun things that people love to read. And also you have recipes. You have drink recipes. And I think people would like to keep that book as a keepsake. So I thought, well, what the heck? So that's how the first book came along.
Well, it's a great story. And it's really a lot of fun to read your columns. Well, I thought, well, and is this going to be interesting? You know, when I first opened it up and then I started reading the columns and I thought, boy, I can see why people enjoy those columns every week because they're funny sometimes. There's always often a good recipe in there to look at and try out. And so...
Well,
your editor was right.
My wife will roll her eyes because I have the same wacky jokes. And every time I tell one, she said, oh, gosh, find some new ones. But people loved it.
Well, and you mentioned in passing you're a singer. You're a barbershop quartet singer. You play guitar. You have a lot of fun that way, too.
It's my passion. I love to sing. I love to cook. I love to teach. So now I get an opportunity to practice all three. Yes, I do sing with the Indian Head Barbershop Chorus in Balsam Lake. Mm-hmm. We practice and we sing everywhere. As a matter of fact, this coming Sunday, we're singing at a town which is an hour east of us. We go to different churches and mm-hmm. have a sing out. And we did it with where we live, Rice Lake, or wherever. Mm-hmm. It is really fun to have 20 Baba Sharpers, your brother in songs, come yeah. along and share your passion with you.
So, it sounds wonderful. You seem to really have, you and Colleen have seemed to really get into that community very deeply and made a lot of friends. You've talked about some things, but what were some of the main things that helped you become part of that community? I suppose it was the teaching.
The teaching, and she's a pastor, mm-hmm. so she is a giver at heart.
Yeah.
She shares, she loves. And with my playing guitar, whatever, talent, I also sing at local churches.
Mm-hmm.
Like one church, Apple River Church, they have a Sunday Night Live every last Sunday of the month. They have a bunch of singers get together and sing. And so I started to know people. Mm-hmm. I think the reason people know me is I do a lot of things without asking, what's the price? How much do I get? Mm-hmm. How much do you pay me? I just go and do it. And I also do a lot of donations because I okay. do go to people's home and do a cooking class. But for some of the, like I did it for animal shelter, I did it for Salvation Army. I said, to do a cooking at your home, my fee is $300.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't charge you. The money will go to the whatever organization. But you can use it as a base, and you can bid of mm-hmm. how to use my service. So from $300, my one time, someone will pay $1,000 for me to go to the home and do a cooking show. So that's a price on my head.
Oh man! Well, how'd you start with the cooking classes? Did you just somebody asked? And
it
you
was
said,
start with the church as a fundraising.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's everything start from her church
mm-hmm.
because I started doing cooking classes at her church as a fundraising. As every student is $50 for the class, but the money goes to the church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you just had to pay me for the food, and from that, I got more comfortable. And I start writing recipes, and everything just evolved because you give a little bit, and you got a lot more in return, so to speak.
Well, now you have concentrated on Chinese, Italian, and Mexican cooking, although you've, as you said earlier, you branched into other areas, but why those three?
Actually, it's more than three, because being the background of being a restaurant consultant,
yeah,
to go to a restaurant to help them, I have to know their food cost.
Yeah.
So when I ask the chef, says, what's your food cost? They look at me like, what do you mean? I said, how much it costs for your plate of food? Mm-hmm. Okay, in a sense, running a restaurant is one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third to pay for the food, one-third to pay for the labor, and one-third to pay for lights and yeah, other stuff. But a lot of restaurant owners don't understand that. Okay, so anyway, to go back to the food cost, I said, you got to find out how much it costs for your plate. Say, a steak dinner. How much it costs for your steak? How much it costs for the vegetables? How much it costs for your starch? The salad on the side, the dressing, all this stuff is how much it costs you. So when I help them combine all this cost together, I have to know the recipes. The Italian restaurants, Mexican restaurants, Thai, whatever restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple. You go to the storeroom and just look whatever they have on a shelf. Okay? And you figure out that's it. That's what they use. So after one or the other, I just become not an expert, but I kind of know the basic ingredients. And my cooking class is a combination of fun things. Learn the principle and basic, and you kind of grow from that. Mm. Okay? I'm not an expert chef. Okay? But I know to have fun. My cooking classes is having fun.
So I can believe that. And by the way, you have a couple of recipes that you're sharing with us.
Yes.
And, for a beef and broccoli Cantonese, and the other one is
Sichuan chicken. Yeah, I sent it to Jill while I was driving yesterday. Basically, the Chinese cooking is kind of the simplest because of all the good sauces. If you have good sauces, that's it. Okay, all the myth about you need high flames, no. You need the big cleaver, no. You need chopping block, no. Okay, what I carry in the trunk of my car is what I needed. I have a bag of sauces, a bag of my tools. Okay, and the sauces, I listed here on my recipes, black bean sauce with garlic, oyster flavor sauce, soy sauce, sesame oil, hoisin sauce, and then chili pepper, mm-hmm, the Sichuan pepper to make it hot and spicy, and a jar of my homemade chili oil. Oh, it's potent. But with that, I can make Cantonese, I can make Sichuan, I can make Hunan, I can make Peking, I can make Shanghai. So once you have those basics, it's really easy.
And so, and those recipes, by the way, if you'd like to see those recipes and copy them down, you can go to npr.org/Larry. And that's going to pop up on your screen. So just go to, WPR. I said NPR. I meant WPR/Larry. WPR.org/Larry. Let me get this right. WPR.org/Larry.
Or they can get on my book. All the recipes are in there. And then it's very simple. They just get into www.phkwang.com and they can get a copy.
phkwang.com for a copy of the book Walk and Roll. And actually, if you put Walk and Roll in the search engine, you're going to find your book.
I'm everywhere. It's amazing. Yeah.
Dawn in Troy Valley, Minnesota emailed to say she has a hard time finding meatless or vegetarian recipes and ideas for meals unless she goes to vegetarian sites. She'd like to know, are there any of those in the Asian and or Mexican culture that would be doable for the home cook? And so we're talking about meatless or vegetarian recipes. And she, what about going to Asian or Mexican culture for those kinds of dishes?
Sure. Chinese, well, there are a lot of monks in China, which they don't eat meat. So a lot of dishes, and at one point, Chinese were, a lot of them are very, they became Buddhists, so they don't eat meat. So there are a lot of dishes that are healthy, delicious, but no meat. Using tofu, that's number one. Yeah. Okay, most of the markets have tofu. Okay, actually, it's really rich in protein. And you can, instead of meat, you can subsidize with just tofu. It's just how you cook it. Now, the recipes that I have for beef and broccoli, put the beef aside, okay? Use tofu.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of the procedures, first thing first, but if the sauce is there, it's all just as delicious. Okay, just offhand, if you have the black bean sauce, oyster flavor sauce, sesame oil, that's it. That's your sauces. And then instead of beef, use tofu. Kind of cut them because tofu comes in a big square.
Yeah.
Okay, block. So you can kind of slice them in bite size. By the way, bite size is the size of your lips.
Okay. Oh, that's bite size. All
but
right.
For some of your friends, you might have to cut it a little bit bigger.
I've got a big mouth.
So for you, we'll cut it bigger. Okay, but cut it a bite size and thin slices. Otherwise, you're a big glob of tofu.
Okay, so you want them thin sliced.
Yep, thin sliced, bite size. And then you kind of fry them first.
Okay.
And then when they start to be a little bit crispy and crunchy, put it aside. And then use the same pan or wok, add oil, black bean sauce, and then your vegetables. Mm-hmm. I love to go to the farmer's market on weekends. I would just go buy whatever they have that's fresh. Freshly picked the day before. My gosh, broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, cabbage, mushrooms, and just use them, cut them in the same thing, bite size.
Mm-hmm.
So your plate is all bite size. That's why the Chinese eat it with chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need forks or knives, okay? And everything's bite size. And you cook them till they're like three-quarter done. And at that time, I would personally add some wine to it, just like what W.C. Fields said. Half the wine goes to the food, half the wine goes to the chef. Okay, that's what make you this happy meal is about, okay? And then the vegetables almost steamed, and you add the tofu back in, okay? It already has some black bean sauce in there. All you add is like 2 tablespoons of oyster flavor sauce, and stir it up. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, very simple.
So there you go, Don, in Troy Valley, Minnesota. Thank you so much for that question. It was great. Well, let's take a call. Chuck in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Thank you. Say, I have a, we use an Aroma rice cooker. How do I keep the rice from getting all sticky?
Depends on how much rice and how much water you put in. Now, what kind of cooker you get?
Aroma.
Aroma. Is it electric?
It's probably not a very expensive one, but, you know.
Is it electric?
Yes, yes.
Ah, okay. Now, this is my grandma's secret recipe I'm going to share with all my listeners. A lot of folks ask me, how much rice should I cook? And how much water should I add it? Okay, now take your, we're on air, but imagine, use the palm of your hand like a cup,
okay?
Fill it up a little bit, one palm or one cup of rice, that's what you need for each person, okay? So if you have 5 people that you're feeding, you have 5 cupful or 5 handful of rice. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you add one more for the house, just in case someone is hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, how much water level? You take the tip of your second finger. Okay? The tip touches the rice. And the water level fills up to the first joint.
Ah, so about an inch.
But it's above the rice.
Oh, about an inch above the rice.
Above the rice. Okay, so just fill it up till the water level is above your rice. And then put a lid on, push a button, 1, 2, 3, that's done. And then if you want to add a little oil, whatever, to make the rice glisten, that's fine too. There are many ways Well, don't tell my wife that. Many ways to skin a cat. But if you follow the right procedure, make sure that one handful of rice, okay, per person, one added one for the house, and the water level, fill the water level with your pot. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So make sure that the water level rises to the first joint, and then your tip of your second finger touches the rice. Try that.
Ah, there you go. Chuck, you got that?
You betcha. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. I have never heard that way
That's
of doing it.
That's my grandma's 1,000-year recipes. She can cook for hundreds of people, but she never have measuring tools. And I follow her footsteps and drive a lot of my students crazy.
Well, you mentioned cooks, and we've talked about chef. And you write about what's the difference between a cook and a chef.
Oh, gosh. Anybody can be a cook. A cook is just follow recipes and just make a dish. A chef has to learn. A chef is the leader. He works with a lot of his subordinates. How to make everybody listen to you, work with you. And also, you have the heart of creating good food, making people happy, okay? Anyone can be a cook, but the chef is special, mm-hmm. okay? And a lot of chefs, they might be a good chef because they can make good food, but can you make people help them do the same, okay? And then so a master chef, really, people just look up to them. I have worked with chefs that I just like, I couldn't get away, can't wait for the time clock. Tick, 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 oh, I'm done. But for some chefs, I would stay and help him out because he really taught me a lot. Okay? So, and then I think Jacques Pepin said that mm-hmm. to be a good chef, you have to have a good heart.
Yeah.
Okay? And then that's how everything starts. You have a good heart, everything will come out right.
And there are great men and women chefs all over the world who do that. And there are some that are making millions of dollars on TV.
You know what? A lot of students attend the culinary school because they thought learn how to cook, you can be a millionaire. No, it's a lot of hard work. A lot of hard work.
A lot of hard work. Well, here we are. Boy, that time flew by. And I will say again, the columns that have become this book, Walk and Roll, by Peter Kwong, are a great fun to read, and the recipes in there look wonderful. He's given us a couple of recipes. You can go to WPR.org/Larry for that. And again, and Peter, you give a lot of presentations and so forth and go around selling your book a lot of times. But how do they order it, let's say, online or maybe the local bookstore?
I'm in local bookstores, but mainly go to my website, www.phkwong.com. Peter
P.H. Kwong.
P.H. Kwong, right, .com. You can order books from there. And then also you can read a lot more about me, too. By the way, I'm going to put the show in the column.
There you go, Peter. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you. And by the way, Peter, just to get us transitioned to the next show, Peter wrote in his column that he has diabetes. And
yes.
Our next show coming up, we got a kind of a diabetes 101 with Dr. Dawn Davis and Renee Walters, a clinical nutritionist and diabetes educator. That's next here on the Ideas Network.